Okay. Welcome everyone to the Roosevelt Borough Council meeting of June 21st, 2021, 7:03 p.m. Due to the coronavirus and the need for social distancing, this meeting will also be held remotely and available to the public in a live feed. Adequate notice of this meeting, as required by Chapter 231, PL 1975, has been provided by a public notice on January 25th, 2021, which was posted on the bulletin board in the Roosevelt Post Office and in the Borough Hall. The notice was published in the Times and the Asbury Park Press. Roll call?
No, the first name.
No, I'll do that first.
I'll make sure we're on the agenda.
So the first item that we have on our agenda is a letter from the Roosevelt Democratic Municipal Committee submitting three nominations to fill the vacancy left by Luke Dermody. So do I have a motion to present the name as a council member? Present the name of someone?
I move to present the name of Constance Herstrom as a council member.
Do I have a second?
Second it.
Roll call.
Who second that?
Bob did. Atwood.
Okay. So Hamilton and Mr. Atwood. So then we have that resolution 2181 appointing Constance.
Wait, don't we have to? No, we have to vote, don't we?
Yeah, I'm gonna vote on the resolution.
Oh, that okay. Appoints. Okay. All right. So we have resolution 21-81. Which is a resolution appointing Constance Herstrom to the Borough Council position vacated by Luke Dermody. Do I have a motion for that resolution?
Well, I'm going to put Mr. Hamilton.
I'll move that.
And then Mr. Atwood second, and then I'll do a roll call vote.
Okay, roll call.
Okay, Mr. Atwood?
Yes.
Mr. Essequoit?
Abstain.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Mr. Mocker?
Yes.
Mr. Mel?
Yes.
Resolution 21-81 passes. And I don't believe Connie is on this meeting tonight, but we will welcome her to
July 6th.
Yeah, she'll be here for the July 6th meeting.
I'll swear her in.
Okay. Welcome her to the Borough Council.
All right. Now I'll do roll call.
Okay, welcome.
Mr. Atwood?
Yeah.
Mr. Essequoit?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Here.
Mr. Mocker?
Here.
Mr. Mel?
Here.
Mayor Malkin?
Here.
Okay,
we have a few things on the agenda tonight, as I'm sure you've all seen. And we have many members of the public who I see are on tonight. I'm taking a leap and assuming that's because of the cannabis discussion. But what I'd like to say is that, this is extremely unprofessional, but there's a few people who need to cut the meeting a little short tonight, get out a little bit early, as well as I don't feel well and Kathleen doesn't feel well. We don't need to discuss this at length tonight. We can continue this discussion on July 6th at our next meeting because, we have the time to do that. All right. Well, which I'll explain more later when we start discussing the cannabis, but, there's no need to go into a lengthy discussion tonight. So I would hope that, we'd like to keep this meeting as short as possible. So when everyone does speak, we want you to speak, we welcome you to speak, but we don't want it to just go into such a lengthy discussion that will take up a lot of time because quite a few of us need to leave on the earlier side tonight. And as I said, we have plenty of time to discuss it. So I will come to public comment on agenda items only. I'll open the floor at 7:06 p.m. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to something on the agenda? Maureen?
Yes. Maureen Parrott, 2 Tamara Drive, Roosevelt, New Jersey. And I'd like to speak on the improvements to Tamara Drive. And in that regard, I had sent a letter to everybody on the council when you were looking at the issue of the improvements to Pine from Tamara to Rochdale. And that request was for this installation of speed humps in accordance with the legal requirements in terms of the shape of the speed humps, as well as the distance between 250 and 400 feet. And so I would request that also be done on Tamara, which is where I live. And in that, to underscore that request, there was an incident yesterday, and I don't know if I can bring it up to now or wait till the end. There was an incident where Rochdale was closed yesterday evening around 5:30.
Sorry.
It was the traffic was diverted to Tamara and Pine, and it was shore traffic. It was nonstop 45-mile-an-hour traffic.
Great Adventure,
yeah, everybody was coming home from wherever they were. Sure, Great Adventure. And it was nonstop, and I was sitting out front, and I just saw that this car zooming nonstop. And I guess there was no traffic control, nothing whatsoever. To me and another neighbor tried to do something, but get to slow down a little on it. But I had begged. I walked over to the police officer who was stationed at Rochdale and Tamara, sitting in his car when I saw all this happening at first, and I said, "Please, you need to deal with the traffic. It's very unsafe. They're all speeding." And he said he was leaving. He was leaving, and he would report it. So and that's an issue that I'm going to bring up at the end, I guess, which is I think we need an ordinance requiring, if there's a detour under the residential streets, I think we need an ordinance requiring, in this case, I guess it was a power issue that they said it was unsafe on Rochdale. Well, then the power company should pay for traffic control. But it really was totally unacceptable. Unsafe, very extremely unsafe.
Yeah. Yeah. Of the situation yesterday, and also I think, I'm not sure if you know, we're obtaining a sign directing, now this doesn't really have any bearing on what happened yesterday, but we are obtaining a sign directing people towards Great Adventure, because I think they get to the end of Rochdale and have no idea what to do, where to go. GPS sort of brings them there and then I think leaves them hanging, and so then they just start making lefts and rights down Brown and Tamara and speeding, and I know it's been a severe.
Best thing to do is send them over to Paradise Hill and let them get lost in the woods.
They're not. They realize that can't be right, and they're making sharp lefts onto Brown.
Well, the officer said to me that having nothing the way it was, and the diversion onto Tamara and Pine, was in accordance with Monmouth County's plan. They could have the plan to send them up to Paradise and not go through Roosevelt. But short of that, I think it's simpler to just have an ordinance, and then we would have some entity that we would call and bill the power company for.
I'm not certain how power company feels about that, but...
Well, I don't care. I care more about getting killed by a car.
I actually also have a call into the state police because I want to have a meeting with them and see if we can have more traffic control here, have a police officer parked, because the speeding's become unmanageable.
I agree.
The other day, honestly, it must have been going 80 miles an hour down Rochdale. And so I want to speak to them about I know we've done this in the past. They've come a few times and then they stop. But I'd like to have an officer park on Rochdale and more frequently than they do, because the speeding's been completely unmanageable and dangerous, really dangerous.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marie.
But the speed hump issue, I don't know. I do think you need an ordinance. Greg would know this. But my recollection is you need an ordinance authorizing the speed humps, and then the state law allows them, but as long as they comply with the state standards, which is what I put in my letter, the standards. But I think an ordinance has to be passed. It could be street by street. It doesn't have to be everywhere. You know, it could be just for these streets.
We're still in the early stages of that. I mean, we just asked the DOT for a road grant for Tamara, so there's really nothing in the works yet, which is why I'm really glad that you brought that up, so we can make sure that we put the proper speed bumps with notifications, with appropriate signage and all that along Tamara. Thanks.
Thank you.
I'll tell you, those speed bumps don't help on Farm Lane. The people are flying through up back and forth.
Low, low Farm Lane.
You can hear them hit the, some of them will slow down a little bit and then pick up and fly again. But sometimes they don't. And when they hit that bump at 40 miles an hour or 45 miles an hour, you can hear it. You can hear it in my house.
Well, that is why they have to be shaped properly, which those are not shaped properly, and they have.
I don't care about them. Like
250 to 400 feet, and then you can't feed.
What I'm telling you,
if they're that close, you can't get to 40.
Maureen, what I'm telling you is that they don't pay attention to any of it.
Well, if it were done this way, they wouldn't be able to go because that's if you drive on Mercer Street in Princeton, they have them.
Yeah, I mean it's a preventative measure. So if someone
can't go 40.
You know, damage their car by speeding between two humps, that's their, you know.
When there's space that close, there's not enough space to accelerate unless you have an electric car like me.
Yes, no, they managed to do it.
Okay.
I just want to comment that after Maureen's last letter about the speed humps, Carmela, our engineer, said that she was going to put proper speed bumps in when they redid Pine Drive, and I assume she'll do it for Tamara also.
Okay.
That was Joe.
Next question. Okay. Would someone like to speak next?
I think Mary was next.
On the agenda items?
On the agenda.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, I'll just be brief since you are trying to have a brief meeting, but I wanted to mention this.
Mary, just identify yourself.
Sorry. Mary Tellis, 21 Lake Drive. I just wanted to mention this so you could possibly check into it before you have the next meeting when you're talking in more, greater length about the cannabis. But in Cranberry Press, Windsor Heights Herald, our local papers, I noticed that both Cranberry and East Windsor have decided to opt out of any of the cannabis the stages that would be implemented. And I wondered if you could had spoken with them or will speak with them to find out why. And also I want to mention two nonprofits that are mentioned in this article. Maybe we are part of them, I hope. Two nonprofit groups that advise municipalities on legal matters, New Jersey State League of Municipalities and New Jersey Institute of Local Government Attorneys, have urged towns to prohibit allowing the cannabis businesses to open pending further review. And this is possibly because the state is coming out with its regulations the same date that municipalities have to decide if they're going to opt in or opt out. So I would think, you know, more information is needed.
Well, actually, Mary, what opting out means is that you're not saying no. Some municipalities have said no.
That
means that right now you need more time. You want more time, whether it's to review, study, to decide, or you just can't make a decision. And you can opt in at any time in the next 5 years.
So I thought you could only opt in at the end of 5 years.
No, opting out means right now you're not saying yes. You're
right.
asking for more time. So opting out is different than no, we don't want it. So
they're opting out.
Right, which means they want more time, which is exactly what I'm almost certain we're going to do. Because even if everyone overwhelmingly wanted it, we simply don't even have enough time for when we have to make this decision on August 22nd to study all of the facts and talk to other municipalities and talk and hear presentations. If you saw the flyer, there's six different classes of cannabis business that would be here. So we would need to hear, host presentations from whether it's a retail store or a grow facility or processing. We, especially with summer coming and vacations, we do not have enough time.
Okay, so good.
We will be opting out to give us much more time to study it. I sent the flyer because I wanted input from the residents. I have no idea how most people feel.
Right.
And so, yes, we don't vote yet, but I would say almost certainly we will be opting out to give ourselves.
I did want to add that we have been researching it, and the League of Municipalities has already put out quite a lot of guidance on the new cannabis legislation and all the regulations and the pros and cons and that kind of thing. And we've also been in contact with our borough attorneys, also have been giving us quite a lot of very good guidance on the pros and cons. And we're really just in the initial stage of researching it. And we have a lot of information about a lot of towns in Monmouth County who've decided to opt in or opt out, and what their thinking was and what their questions were, because you know, we don't want to have to reinvent the wheel on this.
Right.
We want to listen to all the good questions that they had, listen to all the answers, and the wheels of government move very slowly here, and we're very thoughtful. We do a lot of reading and try to figure this out, and I know that the mayor is in contact with some of the other municipalities trying to find out what was your thinking like about this, and why did you decide to go this way or that way? So we're investigating. It's going to be a long, involved process, I think, too.
Yeah,
the planning board, the environmental commission, all the public bodies, too, and it's going to take a lot of time.
Okay, Mary, that's great, because in when the survey came out with what do you want of these six options, with you have no idea how they would be implemented. It's really,
well, one of
you
our
can't
problems,
make a good decision.
One of our problems is where do we implement
it? It's a guide, because if all the flyers came back overwhelmingly opposed to it, then we wouldn't even need to take it any further and study. But if they came back either evenly divided or overwhelmingly in favor, then we take it to the next step and start studying.
Now, I understand the numbers that came in now, it's about 50-50. 50% say no at all, no, absolutely not, and 50% are part of one of the six items.
I don't think so, Lou.
What?
No, I think so.
That's what I was told.
No.
Well, more came in today.
Yeah,
so.
I think many more are in favor so far.
Okay.
And I looked outside a lot this
week. I'm misinformed. I'm sorry.
No, it's possible.
I think you have to be very careful with any kind of survey instrument, and because, you know, well, this one just, it didn't have any information. We weren't doing any outreach and saying, here's what this is all about. And by the way, the state is passed cannabis legislation and it's going to be legal. And they gave us a drop dead date of August 22nd that we need to either opt in or opt out or make one of the choices and all. But there's a lot to do with that, but it was just an initial feeler, I think, that we wanted to let people know that this is something that the state is pushing for legislation on that and a decision from towns. And but we're going to do a lot more research on it.
The initial reaching out to get a general idea how people feel.
So when do we have to vote on this?
Well, Joe, this is the public portion, so let me speak to the public first.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. Would anyone else like to speak? and I'll close the public portion at 7:21 p.m. Under correspondence, it makes me very sad to report that we have a resignation letter from Lori Maher, our deputy clerk, effective June 18th, 2021. Lori went to work for another municipality, which is farther away, so she's an excellent job, and I'm very happy for her. She has this other job, but it won't allow her the time to also work for Roosevelt. So we have the resignation letter from Lori, and today is the first day without her. Now we come to approval of minutes, regular meeting minutes from June 7th, 2021. Do I have a motion?
I'm sorry, did somebody say yes?
Yes.
Oh.
Second?
Yes.
Just say it.
Bob.
Second.
Discussion?
I'll second.
You're too late.
Yeah, there was one minor correction, and it's actually, it was something omitted in the section, the closed session minutes under part B. For what we were discussing in closed session, it referred to encroachment on green, and it didn't say acres land. It just said encroachment on green, and it was left there dangling. So in case anybody wants to know what we were talking about that was green, it was Green Acres land, or managed by Green Acres. So if that could be added to the agenda, that would be great.
Thanks, Mike.
I'll add that to the minute, so do...
clarify it a bit.
So amend the regular meeting minutes, June 7th, 2021. Do we have a motion with the amendment?
Yes.
Second?
Second.
Bob, that was you?
No, it was Joe.
Oh, okay.
People get us confused quite a bit.
Well, you look so much alike.
Sorry about that, Bob.
They look very similar. I mean, I can't see either of you.
Yeah.
Okay, roll call. This is for the amendment, not the actual minutes.
Mr. Atwood?
Yes.
The minutes with the amendment.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yes.
Okay. Mr. Essequa?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Mr. Marker?
Yes.
Mr. Trammell?
Yes.
Okay, minutes pass. We come to resolutions. Resolution 21-82, payment of bills for June 21st,
2020. I'd like to move that we pay the bills.
I'll second.
Discussion?
Pay the bills.
Roll call.
Mr. Atwood?
Yes.
Mr. Essequa?
Yes.
Lou, I didn't hear you. Did you say yes?
I did.
Thank you. Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Mr. Mocker?
Yes.
Mr.
Yes.
All right, bills pass. Resolution 21-83, resolution for approval to submit a grant application and execute a grant contract with the New Jersey Department of Transportation for improvements to Tamara Drive.
I'd like to make a motion to move 2183.
Second.
Second, you second. Discussion? Okay, roll call.
Mr. Atwood?
Yes.
Mr. Essequa?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Mr. Mocker?
Yes.
Mr. Trammell?
Yes.
Okay, 2183 passes. Reports of committee chairs. Councilmember Atwood, Environmental Health and Safety.
Nothing new.
Okay. Councilmember Essequa, Administration.
Yep, we're chugging along.
Councilmember Hamilton, Finance.
No, we're still waiting to hear from the CFO on the introduction of the municipal budget, but we've done our end of it. We just have to wait for him to schedule it. End of report.
Okay. Councilmember Mocker, Public Works.
Not a lot. I guess the only news we have is that our contractor finished up on that drainage behind the garage and, you know, did a nice looking job on it. Yeah. See how everything works.
Councilmember Trammell, utilities.
Just quickly, the water tower structure redoing is almost done. They should be out this week. And we had some large snakes and the generator at the wastewater plant. Very large, 6 to 8 footers, I'd say.
Oh. If I was there, I would have passed out. I'm glad you're utilities, Joe, because I would have passed out.
I didn't see them. They took pictures and sent them around. Woof.
If you were there, if you were there and you passed out, we'd have six snakes and you passed and one lady passing out.
Or I'd have been eaten by one of the snakes.
Hardly. Mm-hmm. They're not boa constrictors.
I did want to add that snakes do keep the rodent population down.
Yeah, I know. I'd rather see a mouse or a rat. No, not a rat, but. Okay, we come to unfinished business, and the first item is the New Jersey Department of Transportation application for safe routes to schools, FY 2022.
So we discussed that at the last meeting.
Yeah, we discussed it at the last meeting. I'll just go over this again. The grants are typically awarded up to $500,000 for construction costs. You know what? I need my glasses for this. The NJDOT also provides additional funding for design engineering and construction administration / inspection funding. However, in order to qualify for the design and inspection funding, the NJDOT requires the borough to use a NJDOT pre-approved engineering firm. The DOT will not allow the design firm to also be the construction administration inspection firm. So, Roberts Engineering has not completed a firm estimate on the construction cost for this project, but preliminarily they think the cost would be approximately $350,000. And then I believe that Roberts Engineering requires about $7,000 to start the process. So we have to decide whether this is something that we want to go forward with. Is there any discussion? Should we just vote?
One of the things that I'd like to put into the public record is we have had, as people will attest to, a lot more traffic along Rochdale, along 571 going through town. And not just during when there's a problem or a road blockage, but generally speaking, a lot of great adventure traffic, shore traffic coming through. There's going to be more development, or at least there is more development in Millstone with an athletic complex that's not that far away.
That's actually Jackson officially, but they're Roosevelt.
And there will be a hotel complex there too. And that's
by great adventure.
And also Millstone is planning on building a fair amount of units of affordable housing, low-income affordable housing, near the border of Millstone and Hightstown. Sorry?
Possibly.
Yeah. And so we've noticed there's a lot more traffic going by, and 571 goes by the Roosevelt Elementary School. And sometimes the traffic is much heavier than it was before. So there may really be a need for a safe school kind of initiative here. And we may be able to put that into the grant. But what I'd like to see is another traffic study. We had an original traffic study done, how long ago was it, Mayor?
3 years.
2 years ago, and I just said to Anna, things have changed dramatically in 2 years, and it's time for another traffic study.
I think it would give us a baseline to compare it to, and you can see the difference in traffic. And that might be something that we could add that to the grant application to show that there's a real need for this, for safe schools. And in Roosevelt, a lot of kids, ride their bikes to school or walk to school, and they need to have safe pathways to get to the public school. And it's an elementary school. It's not, you know, a senior high or something. So, I think there's a need for it. I think the question when we discussed it last time is it we're going to spend $7,000. What chances do we have of getting this grant? I don't think we've ever gotten a grant like this before. I don't really know how to, I don't want to put a lot of money out there for long shots, you know?
Then again, kind of like the lottery, you don't play, you can't win. If you don't apply, you have no chance of getting it.
Well, I don't play, so I never win, but.
I do know that people who buy tickets eventually, you know, possibly win. So I think, it would be a huge help to us if we did receive this grant or part of the grant. I think it's not just Great Adventure and the shore, but even Millstone, there's been more development there. And, you know, GPS changed everything, where I think it used to take the turnpike to 195 to get to the beach or to get to Great Adventure or whatever. But now GPS sends them to exit 8 of the turnpike and just has them come right through 571.
Well, and all the congestion and traffic on 195 means that some people are planning alternate routes to get to places. And they say, hey, look, we can get off at Imlaystown Road and make a shortcut over here or cut through to the turnpike in other ways. And it does send a lot more traffic, I think, 571.
When you stand out there and you see caravan of 6 buses loaded with people coming through Roosevelt, something you...
You've seen
I never thought we would ever see. Then we got a problem.
So you've seen buses?
I see buses all the time.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I was speaking with Mike Maloney the other day, chief from Millstone, and he says that there are several apps for your phone to give you different directions on how to get in, like to Great Adventures. And people are taking every back road everywhere, but one of the common shortcuts is through Roosevelt, 537 here. We might want to have a meeting with the Monmouth County traffic engineer again one day to see what they think. And that would be Bob, safety, I think.
Bob, did you hear that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, even without an app, just your basic GPS now takes you through Roosevelt. It never did before.
Yeah, just so Bob knows, we did have a traffic study where they put the cords across the road and
I was wondering about that.
Of how many cars are there, and that the fact that we did have one gives us some sort of baseline for comparison.
I think we're about 4,000 cars a day back then.
4,000, right? But now with additional building in Millstone and summer Great Adventure in the beach. Because I think the original study was in the fall, if I'm not mistaken. But it's definitely time for another one.
There are costs to do another one of those accounts to do a comparison for the grant?
What are you asking, Bob?
Is there a cost if we wanted to have another count?
I don't think it's
too extravagant, but we do have to pay.
Right.
Do we want to take a vote on whether we want to allocate $7,000 for Comella to begin this?
How many dollars?
$7,000 for Roberts Engineering.
The letter went out at the last meeting. It was in your packet.
I think we have until October to apply for this grant. Is that correct?
I want to say yes.
So why don't you?
Well, she has to do the
preliminary work.
You know, so I don't know how long that takes, but I know you don't have to vote on it tonight.
Well, let's take a straw poll. Who wants to vote for it tonight?
On
whether we want to commission Carmella to begin the process and allocate $7,000.
They're not asking who's in favor in terms of a straw vote, but who would like to vote on it tonight.
Right.
Is that correct? Okay.
The old minutes under new business says this item will be discussed at the next finance committee meeting. Should we have that meeting first?
Yeah, I mean, I would like to just, I don't know if there's any way to gauge who has gotten these grants before. Were they large communities, small ones like ours? I just like to get a feel for whether or not it's money well spent, since it's taxpayers' money.
No, I'm not sure that we'll ever really know. I know we were considered a shoo-in for that alternate transportation grant. I mean, it was almost a given that we'd be getting some, and we didn't. And apparently, the whole thrust of that grant was to give it to small towns who can't afford to do, you know, to make the upgrades and rehab, and that was the whole point of it. And in the end, it was given to much larger municipalities. So, and I'm fine if you don't want to vote tonight. I just don't know if there's any way to ascertain that we would really have a good chance or a poor chance of getting it.
Well, in terms of the straw poll, I'd rather try to get a little more information, and then we can decide. But that's my opinion.
So, if the finance committee is going to meet to talk about it, then I think we should wait.
Yeah, we're going to meet soon because we have to introduce the budget soon, and we'll have to take a look at it with George Lang, our CFO. That's going to have to happen within the next few weeks, I think.
Okay. All right, so we'll table this to the next meeting.
Yep.
I just want to remind everyone that the next meeting is Tuesday, July 6th, because Monday the 5th is the legal holiday. All right, and our second item of unfinished business is cannabis legislation. So is there anything from the council that you want to discuss about this?
What? Cannabis?
Cannabis.
Look, what we have to do, really, is one of the most important things is where are we going to put it? Where are we going to offer anybody who wants it? We don't have, we're not a big place. There are only two places it could be right now, or one place actually, and that's the old gas station. Let me finish. And I'm not sure that's big enough for much of anything.
I don't think
so. Well, I believe, and I'm not giving my opinion here, I'm only stating a fact. This is not how I feel personally. But it's possible that if we had a grow facility, it could be put on one of the farms in town, Mr. Gade's farm or the Long's farm. And we also have the factory area. This is all for not a retail store, like a grow facility or the processing or delivery. We actually have, that's why we really need to eventually make a decision, because we do have some available space for, as I said, there's six different types of business. So there are two or three places where it would fit.
Okay.
And the council.
Again, that's not my personal opinion or my personal preference. I'm only stating the facts.
And if we opt in to a growing, having people grow, we as a town can limit the space, correct? We can, if we say yes, somebody can't come in and take over wetlands. I'm trying to reference Ellen Silverman's letter. She was concerned about some wetlands.
No, they'd still have to obey our ordinances, right, our land use and zoning ordinances, and and also the state regulations concerning wetlands and all that. And I know we have our legal counsel here too, who could respond to that.
Yeah, if I could help frame the question a little bit. So, one, it's not really possible. So this is a market that doesn't exist. Okay. This is going to be a legal business since New Jersey. It's a market that doesn't exist, and trying to predict what it may look like, what values or monetary values or land values might result from this. So for example, let's say right now you're interested in starting again, and just by way of example of what I'm trying to illustrate for you, when you view it through this prism, Let's say you're trying to open a cannabis business right now in the state of New Jersey. At this, right? And you're, or any business, right? What's the first thing you're going to figure out what you're going to do with your business? Where am I going to put it? Where is its headquarters going to be? Where is its operations going to be? At this moment in time, for the next 2 months, if you're trying to start one of these businesses, you don't even know where it's going to be, let alone where it's going to be allowed to be operated. And so what that might do to land values or potential capital investments in properties that you might look at right now and think are worthless, if it's allowed there, we're not able to predict that, because this is just the best analogy that I can give you is that there is a controlled substance business that's already a full regulatory scheme in this state. It's run by the Alcoholic Beverage Commission. And I suspect that cannabis businesses, and if I give you any kind of prism to look through it with, are going to look something like that. It's going to be warehouses for distribution. There's going to be trucks. There's a reason that the beer truck only delivers beer. It doesn't deliver beer, wine, bread, soda, and eggs. It only delivers beer because those are licensed transporters and carriers. And so it's going to look substantially similar to that in terms of a retail or warehousing business. However, where it might be or where people may be incentivized to start this business or maybe prohibited from having this business is an open question for 2 months. And what that will do to the real estate market is going to be very unpredictable. The thing to focus on here is whether one you want it. And so I'm part of the Institute of Local Government Attorneys. Someone gave us a plug before, so I appreciate that. And so it's pretty clear that the legislative intent of this law is that it's like a ratcheting system. So you'll be able to allow more cannabis businesses, but once you allow them, you will not be able to restrict them. And so if you opt in today, the decision to opt in or opt out will be reviewed every 5 years no matter what. However, as was pointed out before, the League of Municipalities and the Institute of Local Government Attorneys and a lot of my colleagues who I personally know and have talked to in other towns, read it the same way. The legislation says you can increase the amount of marijuana businesses in your town, but once they're here, they're grandfathered in. And so if you want to take some time to look at what the market might look like, the opting out is not necessarily a permanent decision. However, opting in, those businesses will be grandfathered in. Just like, for example, along the shore, you ever notice these small beach towns have 20 liquor stores? It's because all those liquor licenses are grandfathered in. Even though they don't go to the population in the new scheme, they were there before the regulations were there, or in their current form. So right now, the Cannabis Regulatory Commission is adopting those rules to frame out what the industry is going to look like in the marketplace. And, you know, what you guys want to do in your town is, of course, up to you. And I'm ready to write any ordinance you want and then adjust it later if need be. And someone else pointed out, I think it was Councilman Atwood. So if you do opt in and allow cannabis businesses in your town, you can allow as many or as few under any parameters that you wish. And the law specifically authorizes that. So you're allowed to have these businesses and put more onerous requirements on cannabis businesses, just like you're allowed to put more onerous requirements on someone's liquor license when it comes up for renewal every year through special conditions. In an analogous process, this law already kind of builds that in, where it gives you enhanced zoning regulations that you wouldn't be allowed to have, put certain restrictions like security and surveillance and things like that on perhaps a restaurant, but that's specifically authorized by this statute. So, you can pretty much do whatever you want. I hate to say that in a term, but also I usually have a good predictable result for you in this arena. And obviously this is a new marketplace, so I don't this regard.
Sure. One of the questions people have had, especially with a possible warehouse, because we do have the factory and there's been talk that the owner has been wanting to sell for years and this may be his opportunity. So obviously if it's a factory, no matter what it's doing, there's going to be more traffic in terms of maybe trucks and things. Do we have the capacity to say trucks can only come and go certain hours of the day or things like that? Or no, we can't.
So that's actually hit the nail right on the head. So that's exactly what I mean by enhanced zoning regulations. Okay. So yes, the law says that you're allowed, it specifically says number of licenses, hours of operation, method of operations, and things like that in the statute Whereas if you just had, for example, say a FedEx warehouse, you'd be more constrained in doing that.
Okay. Yeah. Some of the people I've talked to in town have had that concern.
But one key distinction is that all these uses come with taxes. So while you wouldn't be able to levy an additional tax on an ordinary warehouse operator, the four industrial classes of cannabis businesses pay a 1% tax and the retail pays a 2% local excise tax. So that's a distinction as well.
I've made sure that people I've talked to know about that.
I think
on another question, Greg, quickly.
Yeah.
If we opt out now, during the course of the next 5 years, can we opt into anything at all? Or is it when we opt out, that's basically it?
The majority view, so I want to be very clear about this. This is also the law is brand new on this as well, right? So, I can't guarantee you an objector won't claim that you can't allow the businesses later. However, the majority view of everyone and the legislative intent, the underlying legislative history, is a ratcheting system. So you could opt out now and 4 months from now say we'd like to allow one class of business and one license in this particular location. And I think it would be very difficult. While I'm not saying it couldn't be a legal challenge, the majority view is that you're allowed to do that, that you're allowed to opt in later.
Okay, makes sense. Thank you.
Does anyone else from the council have anything they'd like to?
This is my fourth time doing this, so if anybody has any questions, I pretty much heard them all. I'm more happy to answer any of them.
Anyone else from the council have a concern, question, comment? Okay. So we will go on, continue this, I guess, at our next meeting. And
Peggy?
Yes.
When do we need to have two public meetings, correct, before we actually vote?
Well, we need to make a decision by whether we want to opt in or opt out by August 22nd.
But didn't we need, I thought I read that before we made that decision, there had to be two public forums.
Right. So we have a meeting on July 6th and we have another one on the 19th.
Okay.
We do have quite a few meetings left before we need to make this decision. Not quite a few, but we have two in July and one in August. So we have three meetings.
Yes, but this is an ordinance, and he is correct. It requires two meetings, and it has to go to the planning board. Board in between. So really,
we should
July 19th.
We need. Should be our second or our first?
First, for the first reading. Okay. An ordinance. You agree, Counselor?
Yes, yeah. I mean, I think we should really advertise that particular meeting of what's going to be discussed so that more people can join.
So just to be very clear, what we're going to do, or at least what I'm hearing from the majority view, is that we're going to initially opt out, at least. That will require putting cannabis businesses, the six classes that were listed on my memo, into the prohibited uses in all zones in your zoning ordinance, and adopting basically an opt-out in which you can, in the recitals, explain your reasons because you're unsure of what I'm hearing, and I'm going to paraphrase it now. So I'm going to write the resolution. You guys say, this is kind of collaborative here, that you're not sure what the rules are going to be in until the Cannabis Regulatory Commission writes them. You feel more comfortable opting out, but we're not foreclosing the possibility in the future of coming back in. And then we would opt out according to the authority in the statute and create a new chapter in the code. And then we would put it in the prohibited uses in the zoning ordinance. So it'd be an introduction at one public meeting that, because it affects the zoning ordinance, would have to go to the planning board for a consistency review within 35 days of the adoption. And then after that, and have to post a notice. Because it's a land use board, the notice requirement there is important. I think they need 10 days notice. And then we would post our public hearing advertisement, and we would have another public meeting here. So there'd be two public hearings, one at the planning board and one at the council, after an introduction at a prior council meeting. So I'm not sure how that lines up, Madam Clerk, but that's the process.
Right. So I would say July 19th is when the ordinance would have to be introduced.
Okay.
Anyone, anything else from the council? Does anyone at the table have anything that they want to discuss under new business?
Say that again.
Is there anything that anyone has from the table for new business, from the council for new business?
New business? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, as we're approaching time to redo Farm Lane, if Carmela could look into the culvert in front of Councilman Liu's house, because we're having the problem with the culvert on Norco Road, I just want to make sure there would be no drainage issues in the middle of Farm Lane. I just want to put that on the record. That's it.
Anything else?
No, that's it for me.
I'm going to open public comment on any item at all at 7:52 p.m. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak? All right, I'm going
to Teresa raise her hand.
Oh. Teresa?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yourself and your address.
Okay, Teresa Aukus, 37 Farm Lane, Roosevelt. Thank you for this opportunity to speak to you. I have a prepared statement, so I'm just going to kind of read it because I'm a little nervous. I speak to you today as a concerned tax-paying, utility-paying voter and proud resident of Roosevelt. As a resident for over 20 years at 37 Farm Lane, we have turned a blind eye to the actions of our neighbor at 35 Farm Lane for many, many years. For now, the infractions have become a severe safety issue. One particular issue that I would like to speak on today is the fact that there are four dogs living at 35 Farm Lane who break through a deteriorated fence owned by 35 Farm Lane and hysterically running and barking in our yard. Now, since June 9th of this year, we personally have witnessed and recorded those dogs in our yard a minimum of 12 times. We have videoed them. In fact, several days they've been in our yard multiple times. Now, we had just returned on June 9th. We had just returned from a month-long trip that we took to Washington State to see our daughter. And as I was walking in my backyard, just looking things over, two dogs were directly behind me, barking and growling in my yard as though it was their property that they were protecting. I was very nervous and scared, actually, at this point. Shortly after that, I went up to the Borough Hall and I spoke to Anna about that and reported it. With that, I can, there have been multiple times where four dogs have actually been on our deck, which is on the second story. And I've looked out and they're marching around them on our deck and growling if I open the door. No one is coming to retrieve them. And it is very disheartening and troublesome and worrisome. I can only imagine how many times during the month long that we were gone, that we were absent, how many times those dogs were in our yard unattended and trespassing, basically, and whether or not someone trespassed onto our lawn to retrieve them, I don't know. Although I have heard from various neighbors, when we got back June 9th, they reported to us that you had dogs in your backyard. Multiple neighbors have reported this. And this is very troublesome because it's scary and they're not trained. They have trampled our gardens. They have urinated and defecated on our property. And they have even left a dog bone that they were chewing on. I took a picture of that. Our back gate has been, the bottom portion has been knocked out because they apparently try to pursue dogs passing by on North Valley Road. And I've had several neighbors say, I don't want to walk my dogs on that path anymore along that street because of those dogs are in our yard. Let me see. So, what was I going to say?
They also, by the way, if I may help out, they also harass other dog walkers on Farm Lane with dogs on leashes.
Yes. And so let me finish my statement before I lose my place again. So anyway, the resident of 35 Farm Lane has garnered sympathy and empathy from the neighbors, from the borough council, and from the courts for far too long. Many of his infractions on Roosevelt ordinances have been dismissed or overlooked because somehow or some way he gets sympathy for his life choices. Are we all fools for falling for this continuous plea for sympathy? I question you on that. And it's just a question I want you to think about. The borough's dog catcher, John, has been notified multiple times, especially since last week. And he has been wonderful at acknowledging and coming to our place, even after he had some oral surgery done. And we really appreciate his prompt attentiveness to this problem. But now what? That is a question I have. I need to tell you, I have no joy bringing this to your attention. But after 20 years of turning a blind eye, it has got to stop. He has fooled us all multiple times. It's time for him to be an accountable, responsible, an ordinance-following and law-abiding resident of Roosevelt, New Jersey, just like all of my other neighbors. For 20 years, we have tried to always work out grievances that we have had with this neighbor by face-to-face, speaking with him, meeting him in the driveway, whatever. But what I'm telling you right now, I'm done. I am done with it. I've had it. My nerves have had it. My health condition can no longer put up with this behavior. Action is necessary. Action must be swift. And action must be mandatory, persistent, and permanent. Thank you for listening to me. And please, let's get this fixed. Thank you.
Also, I might add, he uses his driveway to repair people's cars, which is it's a violation of an ordinance also. He keeps his front yard like a junkyard, and then the officer comes by, tells him he's got to clean it up. I don't know whether he hauls him into court or whatever. So he cleans it. He never really gets it very clean, but he cleans it a little bit. And the next thing I know, it's back again. Within 2 or 3 days, it's back again. You know, this is outrageous. And he works, you know, and in good weather, he'll work till 10 o'clock at night with lights and noises. We don't have to, you know, we have to go through this kind of stuff with him.
Teresa, I want to say we are well aware of the situation. Just today we made a decision about how to, what the next step is, how to remedy this. Not sure, Greg, tell me if I'm stepping over the line. There's something I'm not supposed to say, but I've lived here for almost 47 years. And for the first time in 47 years, last week, I was terrified, absolutely terrified, because they came in the late at night. I was in my driveway putting something in the, you know, something extra in the trash can. And everyone in Roosevelt, I think, is aware of the situation. Everyone's been terrorized by the dogs. I dealt with it yesterday afternoon, middle of a beautiful afternoon, running loose on our street and scaring people. Anyway, we are aware of the situation, completely aware of every aspect, the dogs as well as everything else. And yes, we know that the time has come to take real action.
For sure. One thing I meant to mention too is one of the dogs can actually jump over the 6-foot fence. And I have personally witnessed this. He was on Dave Ticton's side, and I'm driving by, and the dog was out in the open, and I looked back, and it just whoop, jumped right over.
Actually quite a feat, because it's not a very large dog, and it's just like a gazelle. No, we discuss this continually. But
so what can be done? What is it that can actually be done? Because this has gone on forever.
It's gone on for years, and he's been taken to court numerous times. He actually spent, from what I understand, time in jail.
Infraction, that was simply for not
showing up.
Not making the appearance, his court appearance.
But still, it shows his you know, reluctance to not really remediate the problems there. Or he does remediate them, but only minimally, and then he goes back to the same, place that we were originally. So what we're looking for is guidance on something where we can really move this along and take action that'll protect everybody. Including him, because I don't think there's, he's not right. But I'm trying to be very careful. I think we need guidance from our borough attorney on how we can even discuss this. Is it okay to discuss this in open session? What can we say? How can we move ahead with this?
Well, I do want to say that I feel like there's two different issues. There's the dog issue, and then there's code enforcement issues. So we have taken action on the dog front, and we have also begun to take more action or stronger action in the code enforcement front. But Greg, if you want to weigh in, of course you don't know most of the details, but basically.
Yeah, I mean, they're two separate issues, right? And two separate enforcement officers.
Exactly.
So I would, code and, all of these are really, we'll call them quality of life or neighborhood issues. And so in the town where there's a police department, a man's police department, some of these issues are a lot easier because there's a more vigorous police response or more localized police response. So Roosevelt has a bit of a handicap in that way, because the state police obviously don't pay as much attention to these neighborhood issues as they would in a town with the police force. But that being said, so let's start with the dog. The dog is under the jurisdiction of the Board of Health, the animal control officer. So, Mayor, I suspect you've spoken to the animal control officer about this issue.
Actually, we came to a decision to take much stronger forceful action.
Yeah, I mean, so I could tell you, I'm the prosecutor for the Borough of Teaport, as a lot of you guys know. And so there's a potentially, there's a difference between a potentially dangerous dog and a vicious dog. And in terms of what actions the dog has taken, those are the legal terms for them, potentially dangerous and vicious. I have a vicious dog which has attacked someone, which means leaving scarring or visible, serious bodily injury is the legal term. And that a dog did that in Keyport, and is currently hearing on August 12th to have the dog removed by the SPCA, who is the animal control officer in the town. Now, a vicious dog is euthanized, frankly. You know, there's something called a potentially dangerous dog, which is a dog that poses a threat of serious bodily injury or harm. Established that by testimony before the municipal court. Obviously, the owner's responsibility for allowing the dogs to run loose or the, you know, how the dog is trained, those things are all taken into account. And there's a wide range of remedies for that out of the municipal court if the dog is found to be potentially dangerous, or dog or dogs, I should say, including written agreements with the owner into how the dogs have to be kept and secured on the property and things like that that are entered into with the animal control officer. But fundamentally, the process starts with the animal control officer. Oh, and I should mention, those are just the two. Those are obviously two end results. But, you know, you're not allowed to let your dog run outside your yard unleashed, right? It doesn't really matter who you are. You know, it's Board of Health, I'm the prosecutor of D-Board, so it's the same across the county. It's Board of Health code, was it 4:1-7.5? It's an off-leash dog. So if there's dogs running around that are someone's dog and they're not on their property or under their control on a leash, then that's a violation of the Board of Health regulations in the county, and the person should receive a summons. Now, obviously, the borough and our administration from our side, who pays the animal control officer, can give a call and let them know about this quality of life issue and that it requires special attention. That's not to say that we presume the outcome, but that the officer make their observations and decision on whether you issue the summons and whether it's probable cause. But at the end of the day, the borough pays the animal control officer. And if there's a neighborhood issue, that's what we pay the animal control officer to do, to write the summonses. There's obviously due process for the dog owner because dogs are considered property within the state of New Jersey. So if you're going to forfeit someone's car, you get a hearing. If you're going to forfeit your dog or have to do something or curtail your rights to own a dog, you also get a hearing. I hear there's probably court hearings before. You know, these dog court hearings largely depends upon the person who is affected by the dog, whether bitten or otherwise harassed or molested by the animal, the domestic animal. So, you know, I don't know what happened in those prior court proceedings, but.
Greg, I don't believe he was in court for the dogs. He was in court for code enforcement.
Okay, well, that's a different animal because the property rights and, you know,
also more recent.
Those things are different. I don't know, I guess no pun intended. Those things are different things because obviously whatever, you know, what's going on your property can or cannot affect the people around you. A dog running off your property affects people more, right? And all of our rights, remedies here are all based upon how you're affecting the people around you. And frankly, if you like to keep a messy house in America and you own it, you can do that until you start affecting the people around you, right? So that's, you know, those are two very different things. With the dog, you know, you can't have the dog off your property and not under your control. The animal control officer can write a summons. I've seen these situations range from mediation with the neighbors and some sort of agreement with the court for dismissal of the tickets all the way up to forfeiture of the dog if it goes far enough and someone's really attacked or bitten. I mean, if someone's bitten, the dog's gone. That's basically it. You have to get the person who was bitten to come to court and say, the dog bit me, here's the scars, and the dog's going with the SPCA on a court order down to be euthanized. You know, that's the leverage on the dog issue. Because so that's the animal control officer and the Board of Health regulations. With respect to zoning and code, I mean, that's Jeremy Kuypers, our code enforcement officer. We work on a complaint basis here in Roosevelt. There's not a patrol. You know, he's not checking out people's backyards or anything. If we get a complaint, he goes out. And so, it's see something, say something. He doesn't share those complaints. So it's not like, oh, so-and-so over there called on you. People surmise, but you can complain anonymously. That's perfectly okay. And, or not, whatever your pleasure. And he writes, you know, they write tickets. But, you know, the property is a lot more difficult issue to deal with because, you know, people own their property and it is America. They have a lot more rights on that than they do. You know, we run a town, not a homeowners association. So it's got to go across the line to affecting other people's well-being and such. So.
May I go? I have a related topic. Pertinent, actually. Okay, so my name is Mark Akis, and I live at 37 Farm Lane, and I hope you can hear me. Okay, and thank you so much for the time, and I appreciate the service that all of you do. I want to express my concern about a gas generator that has been consistently running at 35 Farm Lane, which is right next door to us. We've pointed it out to Anna, and it maybe is making its way through the thing, or you'll tell me, but I just want to make a couple of quick points. It's a problem of noise, right? Often running through the evening, overnight, and in the early morning hours, it's right outside our bedroom window. It's a question of safety. Where's the gas stored? How much? How is it hooked up to the electrical system? Is this safe for my neighbor, for his dogs, anyone else staying there for short term? And then I want to say, what are the occupancy requirements? This is how that house is being powered, gas generator, not for a day or a week after a storm, not for a couple weeks while remodeling, not for a few weeks because of some unfortunate event, but for over 18 months, over a year and a half since before the pandemic. Okay. Now, look, I don't want to be doing this either, but it's come to what it's come to. And I just want to say in general, I mean, I like the idea of a live and let live community. That's what I want. But that only works when people extend common courtesies and politeness to each other, when they find ways to mutually accommodate and to just be. It cannot work when even one person insists on exploiting those common courtesies, the simple politeness and accommodations, as though that person is completely untouchable. So, I just tell you that live and let live is not what we are experiencing or our neighbors around 35 Farm Lane. That is not our experience. So please, council members, Madam Mayor, please help restore to us the basic things that make Roosevelt a nice place to live for so many other people, for which the rest of us pay our taxes. We pay our water bills and we stay in line with the ordinances, right? There's the specifics and there's the general. I just want to emphasize it and make a plea to this group.
Actually, Mark, so I just of that situation, the generator, and I was going to, I don't have your phone number. I was going to actually knock on your door. I just had a couple questions I wanted to ask you. So,
you talk about it offline, that's fine. I mean, out of the meeting, or do you want to talk about it person to person, or do you want to talk about it here?
My number is on the website, on the town website. So if you would just text me your phone number, I just wanted to ask you, I just wanted to talk to you a little bit, you and Teresa.
Yeah. Who should I give that? I missed it, cut out a little bit.
My cell phone number is on the website, is on the town website. So if I just had a few questions I wanted to ask you, so if you would text me and we can make arrangements. I have a few questions.
Okay. I'll do that.
Mayor, I also wanted to point out, so by now you it was nice to meet you guys, you too. I haven't seen you before. You can tell I do this, for a living. And I will point out to you, and this has been helpful to other people in this situation without giving you legal advice because I'm not your lawyer, right? This is the government. So we can help you, but there's going to be hearings and court processes and a lot of process because this is functionally a dispute between two parties. However, and we're constrained in many ways that you as private citizens, like, so obviously you two have the right to quiet use and enjoyment of your property. Mm-hmm. You guys, you might want to consult with a private attorney. You have a lot more rights as private citizens than we, and then obviously the mayor's going to call you and we're going to try to help you, but you have a lot more rights to enjoyment of your property and to enforce that against your neighbors than we may have as the government because of the due process considerations that have to go into that. So I wanted to point that out to you both as well, because I'm starting to understand the flavor of the situation isn't really just loose dogs. So thank you. It was nice to meet you both.
Okay, thanks for that. We'll take that under consideration.
One question.
We understand the wheels of the machinery can moves as it moves.
Okay. One question for Greg before you go there. This is Joe, by the way. On the dog situation, if the dog catcher gave a ticket to him or a summons already, how long does all of this take before there's any satisfaction?
I think there are about eight. I mean, in, you know, there's a defendant, so if he gets an attorney and they can, you know, he's entitled to discovery. I mean, but every court case in municipal court's over in 6 months, generally speaking, 2 to 3 months. I mean,
okay, I understand.
Failure to appear or what have you.
Yeah. How about keeping the dogs out of the office's yard?
I'll give you this, right? So when the dogs are in someone else's, when they're off the property of the owner or not under control of the owner in the neighborhood, wherever they are, someone else's backyard, running through the middle of the street, you call the animal control officer or the state police.
Yeah.
And they come and they will, I believe I heard the resident say the animal control officer already responded at least once.
Oh, no.
Make a complaint or not.
Multiple times.
So then the borough will direct its animal control officer without directing an outcome because it's the animal control officer observing what happening on the scene and their discretion issue the ticket that we appreciate customer service, but this is a situation that needs judicial intervention. That's what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm. Truthfully, with segueing into our whole conversation about the increased traffic, I'm shocked that they haven't hit my cars because they're just running all over town.
Dogs are smart. If you own one, you know, they're smart. They'll figure it out.
I did want to add for the Akises that we have been trying to work through some other county agencies to apply pressure in different ways to help move this thing along. The problem is it's languishing. This landowner will sometimes, he'll do the minimum necessary to remediate it, and then he'll go back to right back where it was. Same with any kind of behavior issues that you're seeing. As a mental health professional, I recognize that what you might be dealing with some people like this is a mental health disorder, a personality disorder, which means they're not really going to change their behavior. That's where you run into this real problem, you know, and it happens with a lot of people, and you see it with their property, which is indicative and a good representation of often what's going on within their minds. It's an external sight of what they're confused and they don't. So we're trying to move along on other, venues to try to push this and make something actually happen because this back and forth thing where he remediates things. He looks like he's doing okay. He pays the mortgage. He catches up on things because maybe he gets money from some other source and then he gets behind again. It's a situation where you're not getting movement. And what we really need is to try to get movement. And if we need to apply pressure from other areas to get that movement, and that's what we're trying to do. But I don't think a day goes by where we don't discuss this and try to figure out, well, how do we move things along so this doesn't continue? Because this has been a number of years. With enforcement too. I mean, and so, you know, we're doing the things that we can do legally, try to get enforcement of the zoning issues, animal enforcement issues and all. And then it just ends up back to where it was. So we're trying to look for maybe more creative ways to apply pressure to get this issue moved along. And Mark and Teresa, I can't imagine anybody being more tolerant and more restrained, but it's way past the point where restraint is, you know, expected imagine. It's very difficult.
I would just like to be able to enjoy my backyard. And right now, I have two gates on my deck that I don't feel comfortable being in my own backyard because these dogs come through. Do I have to wait until and get bit before something happens? This is serious.
Some of the most difficult issues that we face as council, as a borough council, is these issues with homeowners and with people who are really just, you know, totally neglecting their property, but they have property rights and it's very difficult to move them out of their own property get the them law, out of the equation.
The law assumes that you act rationally. And so when you don't, we have great difficulty here as a government dealing with that. I mean, I'm the borough attorney, like I said, I do this. You can commiserate with the people on Bank Street. I'm looking at the addresses that are part of the litigations in municipal court. Bank Street in Red Bank, or Pearl Street in Allentown, or McCabe Ave in Bradley Beach. I'm a councilman in my town of Aberdeen. There's one on Avondale Lane where we've dealt with it for years. And the difficulty is if someone's allowing to let the municipal court liens build up on their house, or not, they're not acting in a economically rational fashion, the property codes become very difficult for the government to deal with, because it's a property right. The dogs are a wholly different thing. That's a public safety, public health issue. But the property, you know, like I said, a lot of times you can get a better result as a private citizen at using your property rights than the government can with our regulations when someone's acting irrational.
On the dogs where the property, on the dogs again, let me just run this through you. If their neighbors got together and signed a petition and brought it to the county SPCA or the county board of health as private citizens, would that facilitate matters?
No, this is a black and white issue. You know, look, I know that the enforcement here in the borough does not start ever with writing the residents' tickets in this small town. I know that that's a maxim of this administration that's been here. But the animal control officer is an employee of or a contractor of the borough, and we can tell them that we can change that policy. And then he can go determine if the facts decide need a ticket. But this is judicial interventions needed in this situation. Yeah. Whether we can get the relief to the residents that are here through our processes or they get it through a higher court, I don't know at this moment. It sounds like a very difficult situation. But it starts with the animal control officer. The minute those dogs are outside the control off leash, or in someone else's yard, call the state police or the animal control officer. The report's taken. So even if the state police come and they don't want to deal with it and they'll write the report and you can get the CAD and then you can bring that to the animal control officer. Now you have a sworn law enforcement officer who saw it, another one who can issue the ticket on probable cause based on that officer's statement. The matter will go to court and there's fines for that at minimum, even if someone isn't bit. And you hope they act economically rationally. And if the prosecutor or otherwise believes that the dog is potentially dangerous, then additional steps up to forfeiture can be taken. Including agreements to contain the dog, depending on what if the situation is at the time or in the past or people are willing to testify to, frankly. Doesn't sound like we have unwilling witnesses here, so.
Yeah, I just want to say that what I'm hearing is that it keeps going back to the way it was, but actually I believe that the quality of life situation affecting all the neighbors has ramped up quite a bit, wouldn't you say? It's worse than it's ever, much worse.
Yeah, and look, I mean, you'd be surprised at what you're allowed to do. I mean, that's the thing that's going to stun you guys is that you guys clearly all live like normal people. And you can live in a house without electricity. I found that out. I thought there was a situation like this in my hometown of Aberdeen. And I learned that you can live in a house unless it doesn't have running water.
B of O with no electricity.
You can live in a home with no electricity. You cannot live in a home without running water.
So I suppose the question is, why does it have running water when there's over $5,000 of bills stacked up on the water?
Yeah, they haven't paid water and sewer for a number of years.
At this moment in history, there's nothing the borough can do about that. There are executive orders that prevent us from shutting off the water to residential housing until at least the end of the year.
Because
from charging interest on that delinquent $5,000 as well due to the pandemic. So,
yeah. For the mayor, I can't for the life of me find a phone number to text, but I resent my message to mayor at your email address and with my phone number in it. So hopefully you can find it there in the mayor@rooseveltnewjersey.us.
Thank you.
Teresa?
Look, guys, in my experience,
his mother owns that building, doesn't she?
What's that?
I'm sorry?
My understanding is that he doesn't own the house. His mother does.
No, I think he does.
Well,
he bought it from them for $10. I went online and I looked. It was some kind of transfer.
Look, this has all the hallmarks of a typical situation like this. You know, this is not uncommon. If that makes you feel better, there's other people that commiserate this about. I'll hook you up with them. But I mean, at the end of the day, what I found in these situations is you must bring the person to a decision point. So whether that is a summons in the municipal court and I'm going to pay, or I'm going to have something happen, or I'm going to have a hearing, or I'm gonna have something happen, is, you know, unless it's brought to specific decision points on issues, it will not get better. So the first step is getting the person with judicial intervention before a judge. And at minimum that, you know, it brings it to decision points, because if there's no decision point, then it's just another day. The sun comes up tomorrow and it just goes on forever. That's been my experience in these situations. And so I would give you guys that.
I just had a,
so we're a just quick here asking
clarification on the living in a home without electricity. I get that, but where does the loud generator, there's a noise ordinance in Roosevelt. And so
it surely violates the code. I'm not telling you that it's okay to run a generator outside the house. I'm telling you, if they turn the generator off, that's not going to solve your problem. There's still going to be people and the dogs in the house, unless the water gets turned off and the Board of Health comes with the stickers. But other than that, I don't want to be the pessimist in this whole thing, because I know that we want to leave you, you know, we're going to, everyone here's trying to help you, but you would be stunned at what you're allowed to do. Stunned.
Okay, so it sounds like there are some things the borough can do to advance the possibility of a judicial hearing so that a decision point is reached. We would like to see that pursued in all possible ways and with great speed. Then it sounds like there's some things we'll have to decide about what we're going to do, and, you know, we'll take that under consideration.
That's a very good summary.
Yeah. Mark and Teresa, I'm more than happy to talk to you guys about that in person, about any of these situations in person. Here, you're welcome to come here if you want to escape.
We felt it was important to bring it to a public venue with a decision-making body. So, of course, we feel completely free to talk to any of our neighbors and representatives. That's not a question. We're happy to do that, and we will, but...
Right.
Just, you know, we've never made a formal complaint about it, but we are now.
I don't want you to think we weren't paying attention. We discuss this daily. And actually, as far as the dog part, yesterday I had a very large family party for Father's Day. I had 28 people at my house, and the dogs came right into our yard. I had 2 2-year-olds there. And they came in growling and barking, and luckily both parents were there that could lift the kids up immediately. And it was, and that's not the first time we've been terrorized by them.
Curious, what time of the day was that? Just out of curiosity.
I'm going to say 6 o'clock or so.
In the evening.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. All right.
So they got out again. That would have been the fourth time yesterday.
And then they ran all over Homestead Lane terrorizing many other people. I mean, people were literally stopping their cars.
And people take their dogs for a walk too. And these other roaming dogs are going to, that's a bad situation there.
But the dogs
intimidate the dog walkers. I'm telling you right now.
I'm sorry. What did you say?
I said they intimidate people with dogs on leashes.
That's a good word. I call it scare. Terrorized. Okay.
Just quickly, Mark and Teresa, Joe here. I want to thank you so much for bringing this to the attention of the council. And we'll do whatever we can do. But you see, we're kind of restrained, as Greg said. But we'll do whatever we can do. Thanks for bringing this up. All right.
Thank you.
No problem.
Is there anyone else from the public who would like to speak?
Maureen? I'll be Maureen Parrott, 2 Tamara Drive, Roosevelt. I'll be really quick again, but on the Safe Routes to School issue, Could that meeting of a finance be public so that people, like, I'd be interested in going because I'm very interested in safety. Safe routes to school is exactly the issue of what I'm concerned about, pedestrian bicycle safety. And there is a, the rarest organizations that I get emails from on pedestrian and bicycle safety. And there's a specific website, saferootsnj.org, that has, that you can do a one-on-one, 1 hour session with the DOT on the Safe Routes to School grant. There's a webinar that they offer that you can get. One of the webinars is actually recorded because it was in June, but there are three additional live webinars that you could, and you can ask questions during them regarding this Safe Routes to School grant. So yeah, so that's, like I said, I'm very interested, and I would be interested in a meeting if that were to be public. The second thing is, I don't know if Greg was on when I spoke in the beginning or not, but I do think it would, I would think we need, and I wasn't the only neighbor yesterday that was really upset about this traffic, people speeding nonstop because they were detoured onto our road. And whether there, it is legal for a municipality to have an ordinance requiring that whoever caused the detour, in other words, in this case, I guess it was the utility, that they have to pay for traffic control, because that would be an ordinance. We can't wait for speed humps. That's going to be 3 years, 4 years by the time that's done. So I would hope that that is legal. I didn't have time to look it up, but I think Greg probably might know off the top of his head. So that's a question. And then the other question is another legal issue, which is, I think that speed humps, municipalities have to, I don't know, but I think you have to authorize speed humps. I don't know if you can just tell the engineer to do it. I thought you had to authorize them. So those are, that's all I have.
Can I just echo something about the 571 traffic? On our end of town last night, we had all this stuff going up North Valley Road, and of course running into the dead end at the stream, and then they back up. And so, to Maureen's point, it would be great if there was at least somebody giving better direction. And then I have a half serious suggestion about the overuse of 571. One option might be to buy a bunch of cheap cell phones, put them in a child's wagon, and just walk up and down 571 with the phones on, right, to make Google Maps think there's a traffic jam. And then it'll just reroute all the traffic the other way.
Ooh.
Might be a cheap and effective solution.
I love that idea.
Greg, is it possible, or could you, are the utility companies?
So you could certainly have an ordinance that requires whenever there is certain work in the, you know, in the right of way or blocking roads to pay administrative fees or for traffic control and things like that. The issue is that I'm not sure they're enforceable against the utilities. The utilities are under the regulation of the BPU, and they have very specific regulations in Part 7 of the Administrative Code. Chapter 7 of their administrative code that requires them to like fix it in 3 days, or they could be potentially liable for street lights that are out. So I know they get wide latitude to essentially just set up cones wherever they want, because that's the flip side of a lot of the regulations that were put on them after Sandy to get the utilities back up and running. So I actually don't know off the top of my head. Like, for example, you told me that was a contractor putting a water pipe in. I tell you, of course, we can put an ordinance in, or they have to have traffic planning. But for the utilities, they're a special animal because they're controlled by the BPU, and they have very onerous requirements for getting stuff back on. So I'm not sure that the municipality can require them to do that. I'd have to look into that further. The other legal question was, Forgive me. There was a second one.
Speed humps.
We actually don't need any actual governing body action. So upon the borough engineers, obviously the governing body has to decide whether they're making the expense or spending the money on that sort of construction project, of course. But in terms of like the legalities of legalizing speed humps, you just need a certification from the engineer that they comply with the uniform traffic control devices. So a certification in the project plans that says that sort of thing conforms is sufficient, signed by the borough engineer. You don't really need anything official for the speed humps themselves.
Okay.
Anyone else from the public?
Yes. Hi, Steve Ring, North Valley Road. And with 4th of July coming up, I just want to see if there was anything you guys are doing to address fireworks use in town. Last year was particularly scary.
That's right.
What's that?
You're absolutely right.
And I would suggest maybe you have Jeremy in town that night, or maybe you have a state trooper car, like, you know, for a couple hours. And as soon as things start going off, you know, start handing out, you know, we have an ordinance, right? It's unlawful to shoot off fireworks, and end it. Because, you know, what's going on, as far as I'm sitting out on my deck and I'm hearing hot cinders go through my trees for 3 hours. And, you know, I could call the police. I'm not that kind of guy. And I think that it could be taken care of somehow if we had people on the spot and doing it and know, you know, hey, first warning kind of thing. You know, by the second warning, my house could be on fire. So I'm just wondering if there's any plan for that, or can you maybe put out a flyer telling people, here's our ordinance, don't do it, and then have some kind of enforcement available that night and just do some immediate action on it. And that's it.
Well, no.
By the way, my house backs up into his, our yards back up. It's 32 Farm Lane. I could see your backyard. You could probably see mine.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, to support what Mr. Ring is saying, some days, some on 4th of July, there's a guy around the corner, not far from your house, maybe next door, I don't know.
35 Farm Lane.
Till 1 o'clock. What?
35 Farm Lane.
No, well, that's one of them, but that's, till 1 o'clock in the morning, he's blowing firecrackers. And I'll tell you, I have a little dog that gets scared to death.
Oh. You know, God forbid something happens over at Solar Village and someone's caretaker is in there and something happens and they can't get out. This is a public safety issue. This isn't a, you know, live and let live issue.
Yeah, I'm not certain that we can have any enforcement. I cannot ask Jeremy to work on a holiday. He has a family. It's a national holiday, federal holiday. We can talk to the state police and see if they can have someone drive through. I think they probably have bigger issues on the 4th, like patrolling the highways when people have been drinking.
Well, the other option is we're going to call them, right, if it goes off. So they're going to be here either way.
Yeah, you can certainly call them.
Okay.
I just want to back Steve's comment. We've experienced the exact same thing from the exact same source. I mean, these are fireworks that shoot off and make big displays. I mean, so the question, I guess, would be if the borough council might, if we videotape it, does that have any consequence at all, like after the fact, or do you have to be caught in the act of doing it?
That's right.
Greg, I guess.
My understanding is you gotta be, the state trooper has to hear it and see it.
See it, yeah.
So that makes all the more sense to have somebody here for a couple hours, station them at the post office, just let them sit there for a couple hours. As soon as they hear something, they're there. I can't believe that it would be that much of a, you know, take it away from the highway patrol to do that.
I mean, as long as every town isn't asking for the same thing. I would definitely speak to the state police. I just don't want to give you false hope that they stay here for hours.
So there's no recourse then, because the state police, by the time I call them, aren't going to see it happening.
Right. So, I mean, I can ask them to come by or park for a while, but I just don't want to give you false hope that there'd be, you know.
That makes the ordinance totally without teeth.
Well, no, I mean, there's another option.
Okay.
So if you have, obviously, you could file a citizen's complaint. So you can go to the municipal court and fill out a complaint. It says X address or this person is setting off fireworks in violation of the ordinance, and the court will hear your case.
Okay.
I mean, it's a matter of, these are really enforcement issues.
Right.
You know, and the reason we have enforcement issues here is because we don't really, we have state police and they serve us, but not like a, you know, not like a manned police force where we'd send the police out to go with no fireworks patrol. But you know, and the chances, you know. So, but you can certainly, but the issue with like video and pictures is like, you have to think of it this way. You're essentially the person who's sending them off, you're making them a defendant. That defendant has the right to cross-examine the evidence against them. So a person can't cross-examine pictures or videos. But if you take videos and then you go on the stand and you show the court, the person can cross-examine you. So you're the witness. So perfect. Like same example perfect. With the dogs before, you get a picture of the dogs in the backyard. The picture doesn't actually do anything to advance a court case. The person who took the picture that was on the stand saying, I took this picture on at 5:04 p.m. on this date, then that's evidence. And so that's okay, the cool. Ultimate recourse.
I completely get it. That's a great point. So we'll take keep track of it.
Just that is a loophole being that if the code official was in town and saw it, that would be acceptable, or that would still have to be a court case.
So the difference is that when the person gets a ticket from the state police and they decide to fight it in court as a defendant, the right. Trooper shows up and gets paid to testify.
Right.
Right. As doing his job. So right. In this case, if the state trooper is the person who wins, we need a witness to a crime or a criminal or an ordinance violation, I should say, not a crime.
No, what I'm saying is if the code official lived in town and was right there at the moment, saw it, he could write the ticket.
If he's working at 9 o'clock on 4th of July, maybe, I don't know.
He's probably a concerned resident too, though, right?
Potentially. I mean, yeah. Okay. I mean, that's why a lot of towns require, you know, resident hires and things like that.
All right. Thank you.
Of course.
Yeah. Thanks. Because fireworks are legal in New Jersey to be sold. So people buy them and then set them off.
The ordinance is illegal.
They come in from Pennsylvania.
No, they're illegal in Jersey now, Lou.
They are?
Yeah.
As of when?
Well, fireworks.
But are they legal to be used, like, you know, through the green belt where there's a lot of down trees and sticks? And I mean, you know, that's a fire hazard.
The problem with this is this has become a huge problem in the last 3 to 5 years. They have legalized certain types of, they're not really fireworks, they're firecrackers. And so what's happened is it's basically made the police's job of enforcing it impossible. It was 15 years ago, the minute you heard the M80 go off or anything other than sparklers, the police could come. Now they show up and they don't know if you bought it at ShopRite, you bought it in the middle of Pennsylvania. You know, it has to be really, I don't know what's going on here because I haven't seen it, but like if you're setting off full blown fireworks, it's obvious, but that's the problem. The police have had a hard time enforcing it when some are legal and some aren't. And they sure don't want to come break up your barbecue for fireworks that are legal. So it kind of puts them in a weird spot. That's what's happening all across the state, really, if you go on Facebook.
So I have a question. We looked over the ordinances of Roosevelt and it says fireworks are illegal.
I wonder if that ordinance is probably from before fireworks were illegal.
It is. And it's likely if they show up and they have a package of stuff they bought at ShopRite, it's going to be preemptive. It's not enforceable in that regard. And fireworks are illegal. Right. So the big mortars that you see go up and explode, like looking like palm trees, those are illegal. Like there's no doubt about that. But the problem is when it's somewhere in between, it becomes very difficult for the police.
Okay. I have a court size bag full of the casings from mortar. I mean, I'm serious. Yeah. East Windsor would be jealous of the fireworks display that's going on in the backyard.
Yeah, you folks seem to be pretty well, you know, reasoned on the rules and stuff. It sounds like you have illegal fireworks going off, and it shouldn't be, you know, if you had that bag of mortar shells that you have, if you can, you know, it's beyond a reasonable doubt. So
that was all in our backyard. That was all found in our backyard. last over the years. So,
When these guys set off these cherry bombs, it rocks the house practically.
So, Steve had brought up an interesting question though about whether or not if the borough could, you know, inform the neighborhood of just what is exactly allowed. I mean, if it's,
can I tell you something?
I don't care. Teresa, I don't care about bottle rockets. Teresa, I care about
the people that are doing it could care less whether it's legal or not legal. They're going to do it.
That's why I was saying you would need something like right there at the time it happens. All right, shut it down. Here's a ticket, and you're done for the night. But that doesn't seem to be able to happen. All right, that's all. Thank you.
If a cop stops them, that may do the trick. But
another angle is what are minors allowed to do with respect to fireworks, irrespective of whether they're willfully disobeying the law, but just technically, what can they? Can they shoot and what can they not shoot off?
Don't know.
I'm not entirely sure off the top, to be honest with you.
Okay, but it's possible that they can't shoot off the big canisters.
I mean, the mortars aren't allowed. Mortars are illegal unless you have a license from the state fire division. You can't light off mortars.
Right.
You have to have clearances and you have to have fire permit. You have to have permits to light off mortars, period. From the state fire, from the fire bureau.
So if it's, more likely it's going to be bottle rockets and those, if I understand right, those are obtainable at Walmart in New Jersey.
You can buy fireworks right over on 537 in that shopping center across.
You can buy small bottle rockets. You can buy sparklers. Roman candles with a certain number of, honestly, if you go on the State Fire Bureau website, or maybe it's the state police, they have a flyer that basically shows you what's legal and what's illegal. So people, because obviously to prevent people, I mean, the purpose is, it's educational, because people are selling fireworks on the side of the road everywhere. So people are, you know, they're educating people.
Maybe we should get in touch with the Monmouth County Fire Marshal and let him know what's been happening.
Well,
you could do that too. You might get I'll be honest with you, you might get a better response from the county fire marshal than you do from the state police on 4th of July weekend. They're not going to chase fireworks around on 4th of July weekend. Wait, they're going to be on 195 and on drive patrol. So you're going to have a tough time over the holiday weekend with the state police. That might not be a terrible idea to see what the fire marshal will do. But then again, that's also a different kind of ticket. It's not a police ticket. It's, you can go to the construction, you can go to the Board of Appeals for that too. So it depends. It's not as having, the fire marshal ticket doesn't have as much teeth. It's like not having your paperwork in order versus lighting off pyrotechnics under the, you know, criminal code. So
what the state allows fireworks wise, then local ordinances are basically, especially if they're not up to date, they're just basically preempted. Pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, it gives a second layer of enforcement. I mean, you're not, it's functionally a noise ordinance in a municipality. Right. Like, it's not going to be based upon the classification of what kind of, you know, fireworks you have. It's either going to be, it's going to be very obvious.
And like you said, if we had a local force, you'd send them out to take care of that kind of a thing. And,
it's going to just be really difficult to get resources from the state police on the holidays when they do fireworks, and the enforcement issue has been compounded by the legalization of certain types. So, it's going on everywhere if it makes you feel better. I've had three nights across the lake from my house that they've been setting them off three nights in a row on school nights and everything. So it's going on everywhere.
Well, that's the thing too. Yeah, it's like just random besides 4th of July, but all right. Well, thank you for all the information.
And it was like, what are they celebrating tonight? I was like, I don't know. Last day of school.
It's like a Tuesday in March. I don't know. Yes. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Anyone else who'd like to? Okay. I will need to close public comment at 8:51 PM. Counselor, do we need a closed session?
I did have a contractor issue come in, but we don't necessarily, it's not necessarily an emergency. I know you had talked earlier that you guys wanted to end up. It's up to you.
I need to leave soon. So just very soon.
Can it be short, Greg?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, sure.
Okay. I think we should. Yeah. All right. So Kathleen will read the,
motion to go into closed session.
I need to get that. Okay. So providing for a private, executive meeting that excludes the public. Whereas the Open Public Meeting Act enacted October 21st, 1975 permits a public body to exclude the public from meetings or portions thereof wherein matters are to be discussed, which are exempted from the requirement of the Act. And whereas the said Act requires the prior to the holding of a meeting or portion thereof from which the public shall be excluded, the public body should adopt a resolution at a public meeting providing for the holding of a private meeting. Whereas the Borough Council of the Borough of Roosevelt has determined that a meeting should be held from which the public should be excluded in order to discuss a subject which is exempted under the said Act. Now therefore be resolved by the Borough Council as follows. That the next portion of this meeting to be held in private session, that the general nature of the matter to be discussed relates to the matter. And I'm sorry, Greg, what was the matter?
This is attorney-client privileged contractor complaint.
Okay, attorney-client privileged contractor complaint. That no official action will be taken at this meeting, but minutes shall be kept and shall be available to the public after official action on the subject matter has been taken. It is anticipated the discussion conducted in closed session can be disclosed to the public after no further action is required in this matter. Can I have a motion for this resolution 2184?
You do.
Second?
I second.
I got Bob Atwood. Okay. Roll call. Mr. Atwood?
Yes. Here.
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Here.
Mr. Marker?
Here.
Mr. Tremack?
Yes.
Okay. So do we have... Everyone got off?
Yeah, everyone got off.
Okay, so I am going to pause. All right, we're out of exec at 9:07. Now I need a motion for adjournment.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Second was Joe. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, time out, 9:08.
Remember, July 6th, not 5th.
All right, thank you.
So we won't see you that night. Will be Andrew.
Don't drink a fifth on the 4th, because you won't see the 6th.
Okay, we'll try to remember that.